All right, we're recording again. I don't know if this is going to go right at the top of the podcast. Maybe I attach to the end. Maybe I slap it somewhere in the middle just arbitrarily. I am all out of sorts with what to say here, but me and Tom are back, or we're starting this off. We're wherever we are. Dakota's with us. We're talking York Lions football, and the breaking news of all breaking news has just broken. Dakota, what the hell is going on here?
So I don't know if this will actually matter by the time the podcast drops, but it is Wednesday, January 17th. At 8:37 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as I would say on Twitter, sources have confirmed York's new head coach will be Dexter Janke.
Who is Dexter Janke?
Who?
Brother of Jacob Janke, played for York.
Oh, you know what? For safety, right?
Yeah.
I like me some Jacob Janke. Yeah, well, you were an all-star. Okay.
Currently, coach for the West Shore Rebels, CJFL team. I only have news. I have no other information. My sources, as always, are scattered in the wind. I mean, I went to York. I know, like, 200 people there, so good luck.
Well, in the event this is going on the top of the pod, Dakota obviously gives us some insight into perhaps the people that he or the individual he thinks is going to be.
It's going to be Dexter Janke. I don't know what past Dakota said, but I think it's going to be Dexter Janke.
I don't know what to do with this now. I have a sense I'm putting this on the top of the pod, and the music's dropping right now. Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics for the inaugural episode of the Exit Meeting Series. If you didn't catch our New Year's Resolution podcast where we set this up, this is where we're going to go through all 11 OUA teams, break down the 2023 season, look ahead into the 2024 year, and just give a general state of the team and sort of what direction they're heading in. With a number of special guests that we have lined up, none more special than today, but I will get to that individual in just one second because, Tom, I gotta ask, and everyone's wondering, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, my man. I'm doing well. Excited to get back into diving into some OUA football. And I think you and I are pretty positive people at heart here. So when you start at the very bottom in the dirt underneath all of the stuff, there's only one way to go, and that's up. So let's start at the very bottom here and talk about York.
We're talking about the York Lions, and there'd be few people, if any, I would rather talk about not just York, but Toronto football with than our guest. He has spent most of his life playing football in and around the Toronto area, starting with the North York Grizzlies, the Metro Toronto Wildcats, the Western Tech Colts, going out to Western and playing with the London Beefeaters, 2012 OFC champions, and 2015 Dave Cox coaching award winner. He's also spent a good amount of his football career coaching guest coach with the 2016 Calgary Stampeders at their rookie camp, the Football North, aka Clarkson Prep, special teams coordinator, the Flight Club defensive coordinator, the York Lions running back coach, the Etobicoke Eagles offensive and special teams coordinator, and this upcoming season's U14 Etobicoke Eagles head coach. He is your friend and ours, the one and only Dakota Vine. Dakota, you're back on the airwaves of At the 55. How the heck are you doing, my friend?
I mean, I'm doing amazing. I wish I could fill my car the way you just gassed me up, but no, I'm doing great. Ironically, I didn't get an exit interview, so I'm happy I finally am getting one here.
Wow, man, well, what a setup that was. We just need to take a second for that. My God, I'm ready to jump through a wall, and you weren't even talking about me.
Well, Dakota, let me start off like this. You know, we obviously talked a little bit about the direction we wanted this to go in. And, you know, the three of us have talked about doing a sort of Toronto-related podcast or series of podcasts with a number of individuals that we know could be able to speak on just where Toronto football's at all levels. And it's certainly for you and I, Dakota, as Toronto guys, and Tom, you certainly just from following the league and seeing the type of football that comes out of the city have just as good an understanding. But from my vantage point, the first thing I want to ask you about, Dakota, is part of the reason I ran through that resume is that you have played at and coached at so many levels here in the city, around the game of football, and we have had so many conversations, you and I, on the podcast and probably more so off, talking about Toronto football and the things that are working well, the things that could improve, and just the ebb and flow throughout our lives and the direction we would love to get it in. I have more specific questions I'm sure I'll get into on that, but just generally speaking, your most recent coaching stint, obviously with the York Lions, and obviously your, well, I guess your most recent one now with the back with the Etobicoke Eagles, but from that standpoint that you've seen the game of football here in the city where you grew up playing on so many planes, what kind of perspective has that time you spent with York given you as far as Toronto football?
That was a very long question. I think this is where people say, that's a great question. Let me think about that. I will say, and not just because of COVID, but around that time, I was worried that, I feel like a lot of Toronto coaches and players thought this, Toronto football was on its way out. I feel like football had lost popularity with a lot of kids. Now looking at, you know, U16, U18, like the high school level, it seems to be bigger and better than it has been in a very long time, which is so exciting. I mean, you know, seeing Central Tech, shout out Central Tech, getting their team back, Russ Hoff going to my old high school and building that program back up, which shut down, I think, the year after I left for sad reasons. But I mean, Toronto football, for including the GTA and including Brampton, because they got some hell of players, like amazingly skilled players. Toronto football seems to be in a really good place right now, and it definitely seems to be going in the right direction. I mean, we have Football Ontario, we have Toronto football, or is it Football Toronto, which is, whether or not you agree with what they do, they're unifying the game, and they're doing some good work on social media, which is how the world is now. All those old heads that say, I don't want this, that on social media. That's what kids like. It's like Zach, when you played for Guelph and had a bunch of jerseys, you gotta speak to the players.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. I really think we saw across the board, especially right after COVID, just a surge back into sports in general here. But Zach and I have mentioned it so many times. Football in Canada is just better off when Toronto football is at some of its peaks. Now, you mentioned about all of the different coaching accolades and where you played and the list that Zach had going out into this, which was incredible here. Do you find that there's certain areas of Toronto that produce, you know, I don't want to say better, but there's more players coming out of that area? Is it kind of spread out because Toronto itself is just so massive and densely populated? What does that look like from a football standpoint?
I'm legally obligated to say that Etobicoke produces the best football.
Fly Eagles, baby!
Speaking of, we completely forgot. I won OFSA with the Rams with arguably the best receiver class in years. Justice Allen, when he played slot, Daniel Diodati.
Wow.
King Dix. Sorry. Just looking back on fond memories. Etobicoke has great football. Brampton, I know we don't really count that in the GTA. Great football. Scarborough, great football. I mean, it's tough because it's tough to pinpoint where, because a lot of kids, when we're looking at summer leagues, spring leagues, will have to travel. I mean, Etobicoke has players from way out west, and they also have players from downtown, mm-hmm. right? Zach's teaching at Central Tech. Hopefully he's bringing some kids. But it's really tough. But I definitely think both ends, Etobicoke and Scarborough, has top-tier football. And if we're including Brampton and the GTA, which we shouldn't, amazing.
Shots fired at the Rose City. One more question, more so specific about Toronto football, but I'll use it to transition into your time at York. We've talked so much about that, I'll call it inability that both of the Toronto University programs in U of T and York have had retaining some of that top talent coming out of the city. You mentioned Justice Allen going out to Mac, obviously playing his career. A guy like Jacob Zod from the Etobicoke era going out there. Laurier seemingly doing such a great job of recruiting guys, you know, once again, from that sort of West GTA area into Brampton and everything like that. Going to your time at York, and obviously you were doing running backs, but you're such a great social media maven, and that's, as you alluded to, a major part of connecting with kids. From the standpoint of recruiting, And I don't know if folks know necessarily to what extent you were or were not involved in that process or just conversations in general. Having now seen from, you know, the inside of one of these two programs in the city, in the wake of all the conversations, like I said, that you and I have had about Toronto football players not staying at these teams and how much better they could both be if they could hold on to talent, how has that altered your opinion, or has it changed the way you see that aspect of Toronto football with players who have often left the city?
Well, I do have to address this. My first ever signed recruit was from Winnipeg. So I do have to to just put that out there. I don't know if we're going to transition into, you know, the York side of things. I will start positive and say that York's newest recruiting coordinator, don't know if he's still there, spent a lot of time in the GTA. As far as I know, I saw him out recruiting all the time at high school games in and around the city, which is great because the year before I can swear, right? I bitched the whole time that you need to recruit Toronto, which it did not stop when I left the podcast. I think, you know, you looked at the talent that went to McMaster, you know, and I spoke to Justice when he was going to Mac, and he picked Mac because Mac had talked to him since grade 10. Right. I think I won't speak for people, but I'll assume for people because I'm fine being an ass. They don't go after top talent in Toronto, I don't think. They would rather, by they, I do mean, you know, York. York spends a lot of time in BC, spent a lot of time in Quebec. And hey, if that's your area that you like and that's where you built relationships, that's great. But in my first year there, I did see a lot of disinterest in recruiting locally. And it also seemed like where they're only recruiting, you know, really, I mean, again, I don't see every single message, but recruiting really only for the people that are going to come in next year. And while that's great, again, looking at top talent, Justice Allen, spoke to in grade 10. I'm not saying grade 10, you know, but speak to him earlier. At least have a presence. I mean, the players are great. A lot of, you know, mature young men, but they are still kids. I know I just said men, but they are kids. And I understand that if they don't see York at their games, they might just say, fuck York. You know, if they don't see Mac at their games, they might just say, fuck Mac. Right? It's about being there. It's about showing up to, you know, at least Friday Night Lights, Etobicoke Eagles, RCI, not Eagles, sorry, Etobicoke Rams, RCI. That's a huge game. Just show up. You have to drive 15 minutes from campus for York. Just show up.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy to me to hear something like that, because I'm sure it's the idea of like, oh, I don't want to talk to the prettiest girl at the party because she's just going to say no. But maybe if I talk to some of her friends, something along those lines. And then you look over even at Zach York, Guelph Griffins here. They go out and they recruit a kid named Tavius Robinson, who's a local Guelph kid, wants to stay close to home, and then decides after COVID, you know what? I'm going to try my talents. Goes to the States, goes to Ole Miss, and is now currently playing for the Baltimore Ravens, and had a game ball a little while ago, has a few sacks. Like,
hey, there we go.
We have the jersey right there. So that mentality to me just doesn't make any sense whatsoever here. But sticking in that same recruiting vein here, when you're going out and you're recruiting for York, having the past that York has, obviously the loss record, I think the best record that they had for a long time is 4-4. They haven't gotten over 500 in many, many years. What does that recruiting process look like? What are you talking to the players about with York that would convince them to go to York over somebody else?
I don't think the York Lions have ever had a winning season.
I think that that's actually accurate. I just didn't have the 100% facts to back that up.
I'll say it. I will say this in terms of, you know, Matt Deans, who used to be the recruiting coordinator, and Chapman, they're really good at selling. Obviously, York has, you know, the new stadium, which is a huge selling point. I mean, we talk about the flashy things that, get to see on campus. You do have the selling point of, do you want to go somewhere and sit on the bench for 3 years, or do you want to help build a program? Right. I think that's a selling point for a lot of kids. Stadium, they have been pitching a new dressing room in that stadium since I believe my first year there. So that would have been the COVID year when everyone had to wear masks on the sideline. But no, they're good. They're pitching the build. This year, definitely a lot of local kids. And I think to speak to your an analogy or example, they're going after all of the friends. They're going after all of the friends, right? And I hate to say it, but that's not the worst move. If you get Toronto people, again, these are kids, you might get the prettiest girl at the ball. If you're going after all her friends, she might want to come too. Yeah, I mean, recruiting Toronto, they've been doing great. It's gonna take a couple of years to see it.
Now, obviously, this past year, you kind of took a beat away from football, just trying to be a bit more of an outside observer, figure out your next step. Very happy that football ultimately sang its siren song and brought you back. And I'm excited to be coaching with you in this upcoming OSFL football season. Stepping back from the Lions, kind of having a view of the OUA on a whole. Obviously, it was a bit of an odd coaching structure they put in, going with the co-head coach situation. Last I've heard, it's still vacant. Is there a type of, kind of connecting some of these ideas of, where York's located in the city, maybe wanting to do an improved job recruiting Toronto football players? Is there a type of coach? We obviously can look at so many different examples of coaching personalities, if you will, across even just the OUA, but football in general. If you were to kind of build your ideal head coach to instill that culture, because me and Tom talked about this a little bit, right? You're not just looking for, and when we talked about the New Year's resolution podcast that we did, it's not just about like winning a couple of games, it's about just getting that culture in the right direction. Because even if you get that, sticking with this metaphor, the prettiest girl at the dance this year, that's a 4 to 5 year window. And we've certainly seen York sending players to the next level, or at least those camps. So you really need to set that culture. What type of individual, from you having been in that locker room, and obviously Warren Craney was there for a number of years, and then they kind of did this experiment with the co-ed coaches. What is the kind of build a bear, build a coach type of person they need to be able to set that culture there?
There's so many things I want to say to what you just said. First
It's
of all,
about the build-a-bear thing, I know.
I'll do the build-a-bear thing first. I think that they're one of the best candidates for a head coach is already there. I think the DC they brought in Nick Richards, fantastic human being, great coach, has the ability to be that personal type of person. That makes sense. Personal type of coach, but also, not a player's coach in the sense where they may not respect you fully as the authority figure. I think that Jonesy and Shake were set up for failure last year. I think they did, I don't know if they did their best, because I don't think that their best is going 0-8. I think that they're better than that. When I was there, I did coach the receivers for summer camp with Jonesy, because he was splitting the roles of being the head coach. The spirit wise, like, the players seemed ready to go. Spirit seemed up every single practice. They got the people going, as Wilfred would say. But I don't think, I mean, I think you guys mentioned on a podcast, has there ever been a team that has two head coaches, right? And I think that my suspicion is that the administration said, let's just put them both there, and then when they lose, we have a reason to, clean house. And I don't know if they've cleaned house. I hope they haven't cleaned house necessarily, but yes. To longly answer your question, Nick Richards for head coach. I will now make a prediction that actually Kamau Peterson will be the head coach of York. I will say that will be announced in the next month and a half.
Predictions are
But
awesome.
they do need someone that the players can. They don't need a dinosaur, and they shouldn't have a dinosaur, you know? And I think that teams are starting to understand that, right? It's time for some younger blood, time for something that, you know, can actually talk to the players and understand maybe what they're going through in life and not just the back in my day. I think if you're old enough to say back in my day, no. Go in the booth.
Yeah, and I think that's a great take as well, because it's not just having somebody who knows a lot about the game, but it's having somebody who can relate to the players, who knows what a winning culture looks like. That's definitely got to be the recipe there. But even going to your time at York and what we've seen even in the past, you know, yes, they've gone 4-4, they've gone 0-8, they have not been successful here for sure, but they
They beat
do.
Mac.
Yes, they did.
I was there and I don't count that. I was so, sorry to interrupt, and I will like, we were on the bus to Ottawa when we found out that they forfeited that game. If you leave the field and wait a whole week, that doesn't count as a win.
Thank you. Sorry, Tom.
I as much as I would like to say that I have a win as an OUA coach, I don't. I don't. I had the same number of wins when I played for the London Beefeaters in the OUA that I do now. So
Well, thank you. Now Zach can stop holding that over my head. But going back into it, when you look at some of the things that we've seen, especially from, you know, the combine, from the draft that's here, and you see all of the York players that have the opportunity to go there. Obviously, your experience, they have great coaches that are there. It's really easy to look at like this past season and say, this York team this last year actually, not just like a figure of speech, actually lost on average by 70 points a game. It's easy to just look at that and say, well, everybody's bad, blow up the entire thing. But obviously, there's good pieces in there. There's good coaches. There's good players. I know there's a whole bunch of different factors that go into losing and seeing something along those lines. When you were there in your experience, is there a couple of things that you really notice from, you know, playing on some championship teams yourself? What were some of the things that you saw that weren't there in York?
Sorry, I'm just picturing the line I need to toe here.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to get you into any trouble here. I just want to put that out,
No,
but
no, but part of me is trying to get me to trouble. I will address that I think we said this even before I was coaching there. York has always had some of the best athletes. I mean,
Unbelievable
you
athletes.
look at the league right now, right? There's the fact that you can have York players in the CFL that have never won an OUA game. Right. I think that speaks volumes. What I saw my first year that really bothered me is that I felt that though there was the mentality of we do it like this because we've always done it like this. And I remember I was having a conversation, I forget who it was with, and I said, yeah, I get it. I've only played, London Beefeaters, but I've been around the Western program a lot in the summer. All the guys on the team, they were my boys. There is a stark difference between how teams prepare, how teams treat, practices, how teams treat, nutrition and recovery, how teams treat prep. And so when someone said, we do it like this because we've always done it like this. Me and my big mouth said, yeah, but you've always lost. Right. And I think instead of the mentality of like cleaning house, like take a look at what you're doing and be critical without having your emotions in it. Realize that obviously something you're doing is not right. You can't deny that. And I just don't think that there's that, retrospective that, sorry to talk in my program project manager lingo, but there's no retrospective. There's no looking back and saying, what was good? What was bad? What should we do different? It's just adjustments on plays instead of adjustment as like a program as a whole. And I think that, based on where they were when I left, they're maybe in the right trajectory, but it might be a real slow climb unless they do something major soon. Talent-wise, it's there, though. Shout out all the players.
100%. And kind of sticking with this, and I'm going to, you know, advise you to toe that line again, because I still want to, as Dakota shakes his head for our audio listeners, is that structural piece, because we often hear people talk about at the high school level the difference between schools that have football teams and schools that have football programs. One of the moments that stood out to me the most in my early OUA career at Guelph, sitting in the stands though I was with the rest of our scout team guys, shout out to all the scout team guys out there, was when we faced York, noticing that their sideline were doing things like a D what? Defense, D what? No other team did such an act in an OUA game. But that's only a minor comment I want to bring up in a, once again, diving into a bit of, well, we'll see how I land this plane, but trust me when I say I'm going to do my darndest to do so. Dakota, when you and I were doing this podcast a couple of years ago, the administration almost had an aneurysm about a very innocuous comment one of their players made on our podcast, merely highlighting how that player believed that they were better than U of T, which you would certainly hope, especially given the fact that U of T haven't been world beaters in recent memory, but not remembering the full details of it, but that the administration cried foul that a player would have the gall to think that they were better than another team. Maybe that was the problem. They're like, hey, you're lying on a podcast if you're saying that we're better than anyone. But I just want to go to that aspect of when we talk about support for teams, and obviously we all know money plays a massive part of it. And none of these schools, aside from, I guess, if you're reading the news and hearing that Queens might be going broke or whatever that story is about, but put that aside, I always have the hunch that if these schools want to build their teams into more programs, the resources are certainly there. To what extent did you engage with admin at a larger level, if any, when you were at York? And do you have any more insights into sort of how that functions, from how that standpoint functions of thinking about the lifeblood of York University and how big a role football is and to what extent they actually care about it? Because I think if they actually cared more, they could make those steps.
great reference to that amazing podcast that no one will ever hear. Fun fact, York actually hasn't won a game since that podcast got taken down.
That's what I'm saying, man. Let's go. The curse of, I'm not, was it James Neese? What? I don't know.
James Tease.
Tease, my apologies. Tease. Shout out. Is he still doing stand-up comedy?
I don't know, but I know that he actually was working, he works like the crew for York games. Okay. After he graduated, I think that was just like a side gig, but I would always see him there, coordinating people on his talkie. we did actually joke about some of the, we can get into that later, but you know, obviously transitioning from the podcast to the coaching, there was a good transition phase. I'll say it because I'm not going back to York anytime soon, and they're. AD that did this is gone. I don't think she gave a fuck about the football team. I don't know if either of you were privy to seeing this before it got taken down. This was during the COVID season when they announced that York would be one of those teams that doesn't allow any fans. The AD, when I say got lit up, there's like 87 comments, and they were just from the players. Some were from burner accounts, but some were just from the players' accounts. Just trashing administration to the point where they had to have them come out to a practice and say, please don't be mean. But no, I don't think, and I don't know how the new AD feels or executive director or whatever title they have, but I don't think the previous athletic director gave a hoot and a hanny about the football team. My dealings, I mean, before I was coaching, I was doing some of the social media stuff. I dealt with a few people in the media side of things. I think their priorities were elsewhere. I also think they were extremely short-staffed, which is why I constantly said, I'll just do it. Here's what I did for At the 55. Just tell me what you don't want me to do, and I'll just not do that to the best of my ability. Trying to, I had a year and a half long polite war trying to just get access to the social media, to the point where I had a whole deck on here's my plan for an entire year of content. And then I got ghosted by the head coach at the time. So, I mean, there's so many areas of the football team that isn't football that are extremely important, and I don't think that those are fed the way they should. A big issue that probably not a lot of people know. So York does play on that new field, the new turf. I believe they do walkthroughs on that new turf. As far as I know, as of last summer camp, practices are on their old field. That turf has taken more ACLs in the 3 summers I was there than I've ever seen in my entire life, to the point where you go on and you're like, oh, this is cement. First practice of summer camp, who would have been their number one receiver? Horn out for the season. It's just, I've seen so many people go down on that field, and I don't know the ins and outs. I don't see why they can't coordinate that they can play or practice on their field. If it's their field, if you care about the well-being of your athletes, you can hire the best, physio team in the entire world, but how about you prevent the injury? Short answer, super long. I don't think that the administration really cared about the York football program, and I'm sure if you talk to players off the record, they would agree.
I mean, anytime you go through the hardships that York has gone through, and certainly, I don't know if you want to say this, but I'm going to say this regardless. Warren Craney doesn't exactly have the best record as a head coach. The fact that he was there for what, 12 years, 14 years, and was never really challenged, at least publicly, about how you're doing, what you're bringing with the team, I think goes a long way with that.
I believe he was challenged publicly on Twitter during one of my coaching
Yeah,
years.
he certainly caught a lot of heat on Twitter, but I'm sure it's pretty easy to just turn the phone off and do whatever. Although, I gotta tell you, me and Zach were watching every single comment. It was and the compilations in
Yeah.
particular were something special to look at as
That was a lot of effort. And it's just really funny to see for Canadian football.
we
It's like
need more of that.
it's refreshing how, you guys have the podcast for Canadian football, because you don't really get that in the States. You get that for every high school team. So it's kind of cool to see there's the anonymous burner account trash talkers. And I mean, it's on Instagram too. I know player trash talk, like burner accounts when I was dealing with the social medias. And it's just kind of funny to see that. We have that too, a tiny, tiny little level.
People care, and that's the biggest thing. Regardless of how they care, and that's a beautiful thing to see.
Compilation videos are always just the best. Just.
Switching gears a little bit here, I wanted to dive into what you had kind of hinted at, and because you did, I'm just going to go right into things here. Obviously, for people who may not know, Dakota, you were a part of this podcast a few years ago, contributing just like I am, and talking with Zach, which is just a pleasure in itself, seeing this beautiful
It's the
man.
best. It's the best.
How was that transition going from media personality to coach, with when not only are you media, but the media that you are specifically covering is OUA football?
It was definitely interesting. I mean, I had a little bit more of a transition phase, so I'm going to make this a long story in a sense. When I was doing work with At the 55, I was still coaching, and I reached out to, if people did listen to the podcast back then, you knew that I was, U of T bandwagon, let's go.
Bird Gang.
Yeah, Bird Gang, Killer Clay. Play with a
Play
K.
With a K. That was amazing.
I reached out to their OC at the time, Tommy Dennison. Shout out Tommy Dennison with the Edmonton Elks now. And, you know, he's saying, I just wanted to go and chat because I liked what he did on offense. And Tommy is a crazy football mind. What was supposed to be like a 30-minute chat turned into a 4.5-hour film session. And I was like, okay, this is cool what he's doing on offense. And for those that didn't know, when Trey Ford started this season, that was Tommy Dennison's first week as well. So offense changed in multiple directions. I texted him and I was like, what's it like, you know, working with Trey Ford? And then I worked with him for a little bit. He knew I did content. So I did some content for him with York and I had the slow introduction. And then he's like, you know, we're just kind of waiting and seeing because of the COVID, what's going to happen. And then he's like, well, I can bring you on for offense. I just don't know where yet. I was like, cool. And then I got brought into the running backs, which I think for OUA and maybe most programs, running backs is kind of like the intro to coaching. It's smaller groups, like kind of straightforward stuff to learn. So I was like, okay, I'll absorb as much as I can. And then, yeah, I got to thinking, oh shit. You know, I was never one to back down when we did the off-season walkthrough tour. And I was like, this is going to be interesting because it's not like a one-time interaction. I got to have a working relationship with these coaches and these players, but I still also want to be true to myself and true to what I say, because I don't want to backpedal. Because that means I just didn't feel like I was speaking the truth, which isn't the case. For some of the players, it was good. I mean, I think a lot of the time they just joked about being like, yo, like, when are you dropping the top 100? And then when it did drop, they're like, yo, I'm better than 56. Like, oh, what the fuck? I joked around with, you know, Tease and Dante about their podcast being cut. and with the coaches, I mean, I don't think it was ever really addressed with Craney. I think it kind of just went unsaid. I don't think he really cared. I think I was way too small of a fry to be concerned with. I did have a conversation with a couple other coaches that I won't name, and you know, they said very respectfully, you know, you were talking a lot of trash, you know, about us last year. I don't know how I feel about that, and like kind of joking, but I could tell it was kind of serious. And I said, hey, look, I did, but I don't think I was talking shit. Please go back to the episodes and give me the timestamps of what you think I said that wasn't true. I will happily have a conversation to that. But I mean, if you go back to the episodes, I said, they have athletes, their special teams is there. I think I said their offense is doo-doo. And their defense has players, but is also not good, or something like that. I can't remember. But other than that, I just try to not wear my 55 hat, and really, you know, I was there to do a job. I felt like I did that job, coach running backs for 2 years. Every year, I had all of my players dress. That's just for Matt and Dean's, because we had a war with that, but. No, I mean, I think it was just kind of like jokes here and there. It was definitely nerve-wracking at the beginning a little bit. I just didn't know how it was going to be, you know, received. But then I realized, you know, I don't really care because we're all here to do a job. And if they really have a problem with that, then they have a problem. I don't. I'm good. I did remove an article from the website that I wrote about York. For those that would like to read that article, please let me know. But I did remove that article when I was first getting the job, because that was the one piece where I was not maybe friendly to York.
Well, you mentioned wearing not wearing your At the 55 hat. It looks great seeing you in that hat. And, you know, last time, as you were saying, you wore that hat was shooting photos at the Grey Cup. And last question I want to ask, you know, Dakota talked about all the various metaphorical hats that you've worn, or I guess in the sports context, you literally wear different hats, but just where you've played football at so many different levels, you've coached in so many different levels, you've worked with our team and the various things that we've done. And certainly, I'll say it now, and I'll say it again later, we wouldn't be where we are now without everything that you've done as part of and continuing just with the support you have for our program. And now transitioning into even getting back into coaching and then doing sports photography. And I bring all this up not just to further gas up all the great things that you've done, but because one of the moments I was the most proud of with our brand was the content we made in COVID when there was no football. And one of those very pieces was Life After, and talking about how the transition, and in fact, actually, this is the first time I met Tom because he came on to talk to us on the Life After. It's so tough for athletes figuring out that next step when your whole life has been football and you've been so gung-ho on making it to that next level and that next level. But as we talked about over and over again in those episodes, that window just gets smaller and smaller and smaller the further you progress, and every year you get older. You've been able to continue keeping football in your life in so many ways. I guess just generally, is there any kind of lesson learned through all of that? Did you always know that you wanted to keep football in your life, or have you always just kept that open mind to opportunities that could keep you connected to sports and just trying out those opportunities?
So I don't say this sarcastically. That's a great question. I think in terms of photography, I think one aspect is I have ADD and I constantly switch what I'm doing. I'm in two different school programs right now. one aspect, it came honestly from a little bit of frustration. So with York, they have this one person who does like fantastic content, but he has to do content for like all of the sports programs. So he'll come out one day, he'll film and take photos for camp, make a hype video, come up for the game. And I was just so frustrated because they did have photographers there, and it wasn't good. And it was really one of those things where I'm like, I'm sitting on the sideline and I'm like, fuck it, I'll just do it myself. And, I was lucky enough I do not support gambling, but win some money in gambling, bought myself a camera. And with football, it was really just much like coaching is really just who you know, and just bugged people. And I really have been lucky enough. I mean, my first football game I ever shot was the Vanier Cup. It was Laval. My third game I ever shot was the Argos versus the Edmonton Elks. And the fourth game I shot was the Grey Cup. It's really just, it's funny because I came home from the Grey Cup frustrated because I could only shoot before and after the game. And, my partner, just like 7 minutes, she's like, you really need to understand you've only been doing this for a year and a half. And there's people that have been professional photographers that don't get the opportunity to do what you're doing. I do need to be grateful for that, looking at my media passes. But no, in terms of sports, there's always a way to still be involved. It really depends on what you want to do. And I'll be honest, I think coaching at York really got me feeling that I think my favorite part of coaching is the youth development, which is why I took the role being the head coach of the U14 team. I get so happy when I see players that I've coached, make it to the league, or players that I coach at Eagles make it to university and get their school paid for. It's a great feeling. But yeah, I think the part of coaching that I do like is, what you say to your players when they're playing is the more you progress in football, the more of a job it's going to be and the less fun it's going to be. That also, I think, goes for coaching. It is more fun coaching U16. It's more of a business coaching at university, obviously, but I'd rather coach U14 for free than university for $5,000. And I know you guys don't have any other questions, but there's no money. Okay, good. But yeah, photography is great. There's always a way to be involved in sports, right? If you want to be a manager, if you want to be a content creator, if you want to be on the field and be a videographer, if you want to do interviews like you guys do, there's always a way if you really love the game. And I think what I'm finding is I just I love sports in general. Football, obviously, have a large network with, but photography wise, I am trying to branch out. Contacted the PWHL last week, so hopefully they get back to me.
That's awesome. And yeah, it has been such an awesome experience, even just for Zach and myself, to see you on the sidelines of the Vanier Cup or seeing you at the Grey Cup doing your thing there. It's been a pretty awesome thing. And just to pump your tires just a little bit more, you take some pretty good shots, my man.
Thank you. I do want to shout out my partner Morgan for when I do go to the games, she will watch the game. She does not like Canadian football. I took her to a couple of games, and she rightfully said this game is way too long. Some games are 4 hours. The first game I took her to was an Edmonton game that was supposed to be in July, got pushed to November because of COVID. Freezing cold, 4 hours. She's like, I don't like Canadian football, but she'll watch the game. She watched the Argos game that I was taking photos, and I would text her where I was. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be beside the first down marker, and she would like take pictures of me on the TV and like post it on social media. And she's a great support, and I love it. Like that you guys watch it too. But yeah, it is funny to see the touch, and I'm like, oh yeah, like those people that are just faceless blobs are just now me. I'm the faceless blob on the sideline taking photos. A lot of fun.
Faceless blob.
Well, you do a fantastic job, my man. Going back into the York Lions a little bit here. Obviously, we talked a little bit about some of the coaches that they currently have. You believe in a whole lot. You think that there's a lot of potential on that staff already. We've already talked about the players that have gone off to the CFL. And whether it's just in the draft itself or actually playing in the CFL, who are winless in the OUA, which is an insane stat to kind of look at here. I know obviously you weren't directly involved in the team last year, but in your opinion, from when you were there, if you want to speak to last year as well, or just specifically from when you were there, how many pieces, how far away do you think this York team is just to a winning season? You know, is it just a head coach that they really need because the coordinators are solid? Do they really need a quarterback? Like, how many pieces do you think York is missing to get to a 5-3 record for potentially the first time ever?
I just like give you like just a number of pieces and not explain because that might be the like
Yes.
six pieces. They need six pieces.
But that's the point. Like, it's not like it's not
I think they need
24.
stability.
It's like it's not like a blow
It's
up and kind of blow up the team kind of deal.
no, I don't think it's a blow up the team kind of deal. I've had my moments where I thought it was a blow up the team kind of deal, but then I realized I'm like, then these kids lose out on football, and it's supposed to be about them. They need stability. They need accountability. So I'm just feeling like this is like, couples counseling. You need stability, accountability, honesty in the program. I would say they need, sorry, my dog is wanting to be in the interview. I would say they need to hire a head coach and give them a like 5-year contract, guaranteed 5-year contract. Bring coordinators, proven coordinators. If you're going to change the coordinators, guaranteed, 2 years at minimum. I think there's no stability. I have talked to the players, and not that I've spoken to this player in particular about it, but a player, Vontae McCoy, who's been with the program. I want to say this is the fifth year now coming up.
Holy cow, that made me feel old.
Yeah, we're old.
Yeah.
I want to say they've had three or four offensive coordinators. This you can't just have someone come in and be like, I don't think it works, kick him out. I don't think it works, kick him out. Also, especially offense coordinators, if you have four offense coordinators and you're losing all your games, might not be the offensive Yeah, I think the main thing is that I don't think it's necessarily pieces. I think it's stability. And I think that, yes, that comes from support from the administration, which they don't have. It comes from a head coach, one head coach, saying, Shaker Jonesy could do it, but just one. comes from a head coach stability where they know this is the person that is going to lead us. Because let's be realistic, I don't care what pieces you plug in there, you're not a 5-3 team next year. This is going to be a grind. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a grind. Yeah. And shit, stability.
Honestly.
I had another one. But I think those are the main things. I think the administration needs to support it better. I think that they need to have stability in the coaching staff. I think that they need to run it like a winning program. Mm-hmm. Don't run it like a program that's building to win. I think they need to run it like a program that's winning right now. I mean, let's look at Laurier 3 or 4 years ago, mm-hmm. when they would practice throughout the playoffs after not making the playoffs. And then where did Laurier go last year? They went to the eights, right? I'm not crazy.
They went to the eights. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That was a genuine CTE moment. But the point is, Laurier is, like, other than Western, is that team because they built it and they treated it. We've been, Zach, you and I did the offseason walkthrough. Unless they've changed it, they have horrible fucking facilities, a bad field. They're proof that, like, you can have shit and turn it into chicken soup. York's gear and facilities are not that great, but it's better. Just treat your program like a winning program. Have stability in your coaching staff and have support from administration. The players are there. There's some players that may need to change their attitude a little bit, but that's with every program. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, hearing your lovely pup Dodge, aka Dodger, start to make some noise over there makes me think we're reaching the end of our time, but thinking of little Dodger there, Dakota, can I just get you on the record? Do you have a certain prediction for this year, 2024, about some of your favorite sports teams? Can we just get it on the metaphorical wax of what you're predicting for some of the sports teams that you are invested in?
Yes, I did say this before. Okay, so I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm a Toronto Leafs fan. Yes, I know. A Ravens fan, and I coach U14 football. Out of those four teams, I'm predicting that two of them will host a championship trophy in the year 2024.
Ooh.
Well, we know one of them's going to be those U14 Eagles, so you're going to have to split the baby three ways between your other loves there. Dakota, I hope that seat was as warm as we told you we'd keep it all these years since you left us from the pod, but obviously, as you highlighted, you've gone on to do so many cool things in your football life, outside of the game itself, playing on the field, and we really appreciate you sharing all those insights. It's funny how with this episode, it'll probably be much different from when we talk about the other teams, because aside from a few questions here and there, wasn't all that much about 2023 and not that much about 2024, but I think that's kind of the key of what we're talking about here, which is that there is major program building that needs to take place before we can be in a position saying, hey, how about these great outings or this great game that they were in? And I'm so excited for this matchup next year. Sure, we can talk about Red Blue Bowl, Argo Cup, all those things. But really, I'm happy that this conversation revolved around the nature of the program at large and what they could do to improve on that. Tom, I'll give you last words wrapping this up as well here.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to kind of look at these York Lions because there is so much going wrong with them that it's tough to nail down one in particular spot. What I do want to really get into, and once again, I'm sorry about bringing this right back, but I just love hearing Dakota talk here. I think we've kind of danced around this a little bit, but we haven't actually gotten into it. Is there a particular reason why you left the York Lions coaching staff?
I love dancing.
You're a receiver.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we want to talk about administrative support. I was, Sheku was, the head coach at the time. Sorry, the years blend. He called me. He's like, hey, love to have you back. Don't have the budget for it. And I just wanted to talk about that super quickly. I understand if you don't have the budget, you don't have the budget. I harbor no ill feelings towards that situation from a coaching side. Administration can get fucked. coaches in the OUA, unless you are OCDC or a head coach, are making tops 10 grand. And that's like the top guys. I was making five. I know a lot of Mac coaches are working for free, which is ridiculous. I don't know how people are doing this. So yeah, I was told that there wasn't a budget. And this was after I already decided to take a summer off of football. I spoke with my partner. I said, hey, like I need to have a weekend in the summer. And she very much agreed. And then once we got that news, it's like, okay, it's not worth it. Cause that also, I mean, they don't pay for gas. They don't pay for parking. So the $5,000 covers gas and parking. And that was kind of like, I mean, I'm obviously not going to work for free. And frustratingly wise, when it comes to pay, all the full-time staff who are coaches get paid, I believe, every 2 weeks, like a normal paycheck. You get for, you know, the positional coaches and stuff. I think I got paid 1 year. I got paid in April. And the next year, they gave me half of it in January and the other half in April. And I can't chase a university for money, but Lord knows if you don't pay for your tuition, they'll chase you. And that's just what I mean with administrative support. Not only just, I understand if you don't have a budget, you can't control that, but you can't pay your coaches on time. You can't, you know, do the bare minimum. It's unfortunate, but the main reason, yeah, the reason I'm not there is because they have no money. And I did coach the summer camp for free, which is kind of nice because I could be like, no, I'm not coming to this practice. I have to work instead of yeah. stressing about taking a meeting in my car on the way to practice. But yeah, when the players asked me, I was transparent with them. Because I think it's important. I said, they have no money for me. And they said, oh, shit. Okay, yeah, I get it. Because I think players think that coaches make a shit ton of money. And they don't. It's not. There's not a lot of coaches doing this for the paycheck. Not a lot of coaches. Unless you are a head coach. And then sometimes I think it's just for the paycheck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly more money in the head coach and the coordinators. But there should be some money at somewhere else, I think. But maybe
pay for gas and parking. Give me a parking pass.
Yeah. And I think once again, that goes back to the administration more than the actual coaches. So,
oh, it's not the coach's fault at all.
Yeah. That's tough. It's so hard when you're going out. And I think it's anybody who's watching York knows that losing 70-0, 80-0 in games, it's not just the players. It's not just the coaches. It's not just what's on the field. It's all of the supporting pieces around there or lack thereof that kind of lead into that. And while I really don't want to turn this into a York Flame podcast here, you really...
I'll say something nice after.
Yeah, at some point, you have to, as OUA fans, as OUA media, as who we are, have to stand up and say what you've been doing right now is not good enough. You can't properly represent the OUA and put out the product that you have on the field here. Whether that means recruiting better, whether you want to put it back to the coaches, whatever. We've already established that they do have good players. There are good coaches here. Let's see the support systems around it. Let's see the university, the administration. There's a new athletic director in there. There's opportunities here. Let's see a new atmosphere to just support this team and watch how that will change a culture, change an atmosphere of a program overnight. So, yes, there's a lot of issues with the York Lions right now, but there should be more support around them so that you don't see an 80-0 game in an Ontario University football game. That's just not acceptable.
I definitely agree. I do want to say something nice towards the players and the coaches. We could talk about, you know, toughness in football. I don't think there's anything more tough than a player getting the shit pumped out of them, 80-0, going home, waking up the next morning, going to ice baths and recovery, watching film, going into practice, mm-hmm. practicing all week, getting on a bus. And, you know, the players aren't oblivious to the situation. they go into each game knowing that they're probably going to get absolutely shit pumped and still give it their all, because they're not, again, it's not the players, you know, it's a multitude of things. You know, I've worked with, you know, some great coaches. Tommy Dennison's one of the best OCs, if not the best OC that I've worked with.
Just wait till this summer, brother.
Oh, true. Sorry, Zach. I forgot I hired you as the OC. Like, winning is easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll Western, amazing team. I love Western. That's my school. It's a hell of a lot easier going into practice knowing you're going to put up 80 than going into practice and knowing you're going to get the shit beat out of you for 9 weeks. Because by week, you're still probably going to get the shit beat out of you. It's, you know, I hate to be like kudos to them for like going through it, but
no, but for,
man,
sure.
When I was there, I didn't, it's so tough getting on that bus and going to Ottawa and being like, actually, we almost won that game. That was the closest game we had. But yeah, it's just, it kudos to them, because it's tough as hell to know you're not going to win and really try to trick yourself and be like, no, we can do this. You know, if we just make these couple plays and if we do this or that, and then 80 nothing.
For sure. And like, it goes back to the quality of, and the character of the players themselves. It's not like, yes, this year in particular was really bad. 70 to nothing on an average is, I think, the worst that I've seen it across the board here. But it's not like they were going into this thinking that, oh, we're going to go 8-0 next year. Like, they're going in, they're working their butts off, they're training, they're doing everything they can to be as competitive as possible here. And for a while there, that Waterloo game this past year was really competitive. Alfred Olé starts off with an opening kick return for a touchdown.
Olé's that guy.
Yeah, they're 7-0 in it, and you're right into the game here. So I think that there's pieces. I think that there's so many things that could possibly go right for this team. They've got players. They've got coaches. I just, whether it's the administration, whether it's whatever else, they need to have some support here and at least be put in the position to be successful first and foremost.
Yeah, 100%. I just, you know, I hope they do start winning, because the one time that you're going to see players drop off is those third year players who are, you know, 20 years old and they're like, I haven't won a game in 3 years. I need to get a job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or reality hits you quick when you stop being a teen. And, you know, I had players drop off. Like, you know, I do have, you know, Darnell Neasy told me after that 1 year at Coachman, he's like, yeah, I have a year of eligibility, but shit, I got to work. Like, why am I going to put my body through that? Mm-hmm. Right. I have a real job now. This is what's important. And, you know, the guys that I coach from then their first year, you know, Alunga and Fawcett, they take beatings every year. And at a certain point, they're going to want to see something out of that. And if they're not getting wins, I would understand if players start, you know, walking away, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great players. Gosh, just like win like one game. Mm-hmm. Just one game. And not like that Mac game. That didn't count.
Well, I mean, Dakota, obviously, that's a bit of a, we can go through history of guys we played with growing up who, it was like a one and done at York, right? So trying to, once again, going back to that culture building piece, that's kind of permeated through this whole conversation. And hey, Dakota, though neither myself nor Tom are part of the York Lions organization, and shoot, maybe if we were in their admin, things would be a little bit better. I'm happy we finally got to get you your exit meeting about said
yeah, what
York
the fuck
Lions.
Was that about? Why didn't I get an exit? Oh, actually, I know why.
That'll be for the Patreon paywall content if you want to hear that
head
story.
Coach switcheroo.
Dakota, I obviously got to talk to you a whole bunch in our lives outside of podcasting and just at the 55 stuff in general, but always fun having you on the pod, and especially on an inaugural new segment that we're starting right here. It was an absolute pleasure, my friend. So as we would do in real life, I'll do just the same on our sign off here. Dakota, be kind to yourself, my friend.
Be kind to yourself.
Peace.
All
right, Tom, that's a wrap for our first episode of the exit meeting. We'll bring it to a close on that. Any final words on the York Lion piece there?
Yeah, I think I really wanted to say that last piece there right before we kind of ended things off. This has to be a if you're going to continue to be a part of the OUA, there needs to be a standard here, not just from the players, not just from the coaches, but from the administration, from the university itself. And I'm hoping that this will bring a little bit more light to everybody else and realizing that when you are a head coach looking after a team, that's hard enough. But when you also have to kind of look around and say, oh, I got to do everything else as well. I got to make sure that these kids are being successful in school so that they can continue to play. I got to make sure that my coaches are actually paid so that I can continue to have them there. That's a whole lot of other responsibility here. So there's a lot more going on than just what's on the field for these York Lions. But I have not given up hope that this program can be successful. It can have wins. We can get the York Lions back to where they should be, or at least in the winning column once again here. When you look at the talent in Toronto, when you look at all the talent that they could potentially bring in here, they just have to go about things the right way and be supportive.
No doubt. And you know what? We've seen some signs of success not too long ago. Obviously, as we talked about with Dakota, that above 500 season is still yet to be seen. So I guess success in all things is a relative term. Let's put a bow on it there. That is episode one of the Exit Meeting series. If you remember, we said we're going in reverse chronological order of how teams finished last year. So next up for you are the UFT Blues. So we'll talk to you then, breaking down another Toronto football squad right here at 55.